Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're continuing today with our expectations series. We're going to look at two players, one on offense, one on defense, as always. Today's players are Roger Rosengarten and Sanusi Kane. And joining me to talk about those two is Justin Isett. Justin, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Ken?
I'm doing well. Did I pronounce your last name correctly?
You did. You got it. Yeah, I set the table.
I set the table. There you go. All right. So, as always, the undercard on this we'll start with, and that's Sanusi Kane, seventh-round selection from Purdue in 2024. His role, while he had, you know, good special teams year as a rookie and played a little bit on the back end, I think it was about 24 snaps, so 22 snaps in total. Kane's usefulness on this team might have gotten a lot more with the Ardarius Washington injury.
Right, yeah. We play a lot of three safety sets. We wanted two deep so we could move Kyle back to the line of scrimmage, whereas he's a defensive player of the year type of talent. Certainly one of the best safeties in the league around the line. So having that too high shell and Kyle playing slot corner, inside linebacker, all those things, that's only really possible if you can field three competent safeties.
Right. Absolutely. And they've had some problems, in fact, in the past. And this is where the Ravens are in a deeper hole than just that would have been indicated, is that the, in order to have a three safety look, you really have to have four active on game day, or you'll run into a situation where you can't all of a sudden can't field that group anymore. And in order to have a four safety look, and they would have that when they have a dime back plus a slot corner who's a safety, then you have to have five active on game day. And I guess I'm okay if the five to make four look is really only a four to make four, and you have to make do with Sanusi Kane as your fifth. Or maybe even Bo Braid is your fifth, but I can't have Kane and Braid be number four and five. I can't. I don't think that's a practical solution.
Right. I think the Ravens are in a position right now where they're certainly going to be looking for a veteran safety, with the hope that either Braid or Kane become sort of a Chuck Clark or a Geno Stone. We seem to be able to find those guys. Excuse me. We seem to be able to find those guys. And in fact, I was thinking, kind of looking back over the Ravens' history, you could make an argument that the position we've drafted the most successfully has been safety.
Yeah.
Two first-team All-Pro. I mean, Ed Reed, if not the best to ever do it, one of the, what, three? And then Kyle Hamilton, certainly one of the one or two best safeties of his generation. Mm-hmm. And then you have your Chuck Clarks, DeJuan Landry, Tom Zbikowski, guys who can give you meaningful snaps. And I think to get to Kane, you know, when you're looking at a seventh round draft pick, I don't think anyone's thinking this guy's got to be, you know, on the fringe of the Pro Bowl for him to be a successful player. But he can't be a liability out there, especially when you're playing safety. You can be counting six real quick.
Right. He's a good tackler. So actually that part of the game, I don't have a problem with him. Where it would be more likely he would let the team down is being in the wrong position, for first of all. And second, on the back end, he has to be someone who instills some fear in the opposing quarterback by creating loose bracket situations, getting to the spot where the ball is actually going. So he's got to diagnose well. It's much more of an instincts position than a speed position. So it's not any kind of speed limitation he has, which I'm not even sure what his speed is, but it won't limit him at the position. Kyle Hamilton can play it. I'm sure he can too.
Yeah. I was going to say, I feel like Kane, just watching him on tape, he's a pretty good mover. I've never seen him out there and think he's not covering ground at an NFL speed.
Yeah. But he does need to be in the right position. He needs to guess well enough, often enough, that he's in the right position for a play on the football. And Geno Stone was outstanding at that. And the Ravens lived with other limitations he had as a tackler to deal with that. They're not going to have to live with the limitations as a tackler with Kane, I don't believe, but they're also not going to get anywhere near the ball skills that they got with Geno Stone, I'm afraid. And both Kane and Braid, in terms of the preseason last year, showed up around the line of scrimmage very well. Braid in particular, very heavily weighted towards what he did around the line of scrimmage. Kane is a little bit better on the back end, but I don't really think either of them has shown to me clearly they can be anything but a dime back. And there's nothing wrong with that. Hey, the Ravens probably need a great dime back in this situation if they're bringing in a fourth safety. But if they want Hamilton at dime and Humphrey at nickel, I mean, they're not going to be able to depend on either Kane or Braid, I don't think, to play the back end. So, by the way, I'm in agreement with you that I think they'll bring in somebody else. There'll be a large attempt to try and have two of their good special teams players from last year learn to play the back end. And we'll probably see that all of camp is them really trying to mold those guys into back end players. But in the end, they might have to find somebody else. I mean, neither of these guys may be the guy they need.
Yeah. When it comes to developing, you have hopes for players and then realistic expectations of players. So if you bring in, if I was just going to pick someone, it'd be Justin Simmons, who played for Atlanta last year, who's been, a really solid player for Denver for many, many years before that. Had a pretty solid season with the Falcons last year. Certainly still looked like an NFL caliber safety on the deep end. I live in Atlanta, so I catch some of his games, right? So he would be someone where you have enough talent on the back end that we can let Kyle do Kyle things between what we expect from Malachi Starks. When you have a first round pick, that is your investment. Like, very, very rarely do I think a playoff caliber team is in a position where the first round pick can't be a starter. I could be wrong about that, but it feels like your first rounder, you're expecting that guy to start maybe midseason and play really meaningful.
Oh, right away. No, Malachi Starks will be a starter in week one. If he's not, there's a big problem because they need him to be the free safety. One of the things about the Washington injury is it makes clear exactly what Malachi Starks' role is. If they had any thoughts of, oh, he's going to be Mr. Versatile up and back and he can play anywhere you want, nah, that's not happening now. He's got to be the free safety alone.
He's at the top of the Christmas tree. Someone's got to play. There's got to be someone you can't run past at the back end, or you're going to be losing games like we lost games last year when no one could play at the top of the Christmas tree.
There you go. I have not heard it said that way. That's an interesting way to put it. I do have serious concerns about a player like Justin Simmons. He gave up 10 yards per target 2 years ago. Sorry, 3 years ago, let's call it. 9 yards per target 2 years ago and 8 yards per target last year. The trend is in the right direction, but I don't entirely trust it, being where he was. So he's a guy, at his age, and he'll be 32 in November. I wouldn't try and sign him. And I think also he's going to cost some money. So I think the Ravens' ideal player is probably a cast off from another team. And the reason I say this, by the way, the size and shape pool at safety is enormous. And you have a lot of safeties being generated every year, and teams run through them. They give them trials and then they throw them away. The Ravens did that with Jeremy Lucien, who's a player that I've stayed in contact with. But he's the guy who's trying to play in the CFL right now. I'm not saying he's the guy the Ravens go out and get, but I'm saying there are 20 others like him out there of the same vintage who they can go and try and select from and try and get a player who has multiple years of team control that they could work with. Anybody else is just a Band-Aid if they go get a player for 1 year.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking for there's stopgap contracts and then there's investment contracts, and this is probably more of a stopgap contract. But to speak to Kane specifically, I went back to his Purdue tape, or at least what you could find. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a seventh round pick, so it's not like there was a lot of football channels doing, the type of analysis we saw for Malachi Starks, All American 3 years. The things Kane would really popped is moving downhill, finding the lane. In primarily the run game,
right,
and then the tackle itself, he can bring it. I mean, he can, you know, you can see him on a 220-pound running back. There was one kind of option quarterback play where, you know, they had a shorter, kind of stockier running back on him, someone who had probably some mass coming downhill, and he just gets under his chest, helmet right into the sternum, and that play stood up real quick. You can trust him with that stuff. I mean, that's how he got on special teams. You know, he can get down the field really quickly. He can make really good open field tackles when you're dealing even with punt returners in an open space. But, you know, we're both in agreement. Everything about if he's going to have an NFL career in a second contract, it's going to be if he can play the deep end safety.
Right. Exactly. I mean, even as a dime back, I guess it's possible he could be a survivor. He really did have a huge role on special teams in 2024 for the Ravens. He played, I want to say it was like 360 snaps. Yeah, 364 snaps. And it was split across five units with at least 50 snaps played on five different units, including field goal block and the punt and kickoff coverage and return. So he's one of their core guys. And he's active. He was active for the bulk of games, 17 games, including two in the postseason, where so he only missed two games, where Braid missed several games with being a healthy scratch or an inactive for other reasons.
Yeah, I'm a Terp. I went to Maryland, so obviously I want Bo Braid to emerge and be mm-hmm. that guy. But I do think Sanusi Kane has more talent and brings more to the field. It's funny. It's just he hasn't played enough. The fact that he's played so little at the back end kind of, I think, isn't a great sign. I mean, we're talking about a seventh round pick, so it's not like we mm-hmm. have huge expectations anyway. He did apparently play more in the back end in like 2022 in college. So his draft year, and I don't have stats on this if you want to look it up. But
yeah, I'll look it up. Go ahead.
Yeah. So his draft year, when he really started standing out, they started playing him more kind of in a joker role where it was more eight in the box. And you're talking about college. So in college, you have just more responsibilities towards the line of the scrimmage in a lot of positions, just because you're seeing so many sort of RPOs and screens and like bunch formations where you have to take on kind of a lead blocker in a three receiver set. But Edgar Allen, the YouTube channel, who does tape breakdown, he was the only person I found who did a tape breakdown of him, said he actually did play some back end the year before, but I'm not sure if he played it particularly well.
So 23, he really didn't play any free safety, just 32 snaps they have him for. That's really nothing at all. He played 434 in the box and 230 at slot corner. But you're absolutely right, in 22 he played primarily free, well, not primarily, but plurally free safety, where he played 382 of his 906 snaps, 237 in the box and 141 at slot corner. That's not everything about his usage, because particularly when you're talking about who's a slot corner, who's a box player, this or that, with corners in particular, I'm getting some huffing and puffing from you there. I know it's kind of hard to deal with there, but the PFF positions aren't perfect in that regard. It's often like at the snap, where were they placed? So you have to be a little bit careful with it, but it looks like, you know, that's clearly definitely true. What you said is he played a lot more free safety in 22.
Yeah. And that's a good sign. And, you know, I don't know how much time, I feel like we kind of know who Kane is. Special teams, he's, I think pretty special there. He seems like a really great teamer, which, you know, if you're just kind of talking about the draft in general, a lot of people, when they look at the draft, they're trying to find starters in the fourth and fifth round if they're trying to win now. But it's much more realistic to get a guy like Sanusi Kane or Teddy Buchanan this year. It's like, I'm pretty sure that guy can just run and hit like a maniac and get down a punt returner. You know, those are really realistic rookie contributions. But in terms of replacing Washington, that would be a huge boon to the Ravens, and I think a completely unrealistic expectation right at this moment.
It might be, and obviously replacing the level at which Washington played last year would be very unrealistic. The question is, can you bring in somebody who's a competent player? Washington's a huge loss. I mean, there's no two ways about it. Maybe if Kane is back there, you get a little bit better tackler and a moderately worse coverage guy, because Washington, you know, certainly seemed to have some skills there. But here's the basic problem that a really good special teams player poses for a team, is that he clogs up the roster in a way that you don't have the offensive and defensive contributions you need covered. So the Ravens have typically been very careful with this, have been very good with getting players who will give you both, getting players who can give you a role of some sort that can play on defense along the special teams plays, or just the same thing on offense. And the perfect examples of that, Malik Harrison, Tylan Wallace fits that bill exactly. You go back, Albert McClellan, Anthony Levine, great dimeback who could Danielle Ellerby would be a great one. Jameel McClain did some of that too. I mean, you definitely have players who can do both. And the other part of that question is, can the Ravens afford not to have Kane on the roster, given the loss of Harrison, Borden, Welch? Can the Ravens afford not to have him, given all the special team snaps they've lost? So on the one hand, they really want to have players who do both. On the other hand, they've lost so much in terms of special teams quality of play. Can they afford not to have him on the roster?
Yeah, I think that depends on how a lot of other guys shape out. You know, I mean, I'm expecting huge special team contributions from Buchanan this year. I mean, the guy's a stud. I mean, 40-inch vert, 4.6 40, seems like a really good tackler. None of his tape issues would lead me to believe.
Block shedding or something won't be an issue on special teams, yeah.
Nah, I need a big boy who is scary and can run down the field with his hair on fire. Like, you know, he definitely seems to check that box. And, yeah, I remember just when I think about sort of like how teams win and succeed in the NFL, I remember just Chris Carter one year saying, if I know anything, it's coaching matters. And, you know, the one thing about last year's roster is I don't think the secondary coaching was in a great position. I think it's much better now. I honestly forgot who our secondary coach was, but obviously losing, I'm missing the, he was the defensive coordinator in Miami, right? But we lost our secondary coach
we brought in Pagano.
This year,
secondary, yes.
So the year before, between 2023 and 2024,
Leslie Frazier, are we talking about,
I believe so.
I'll look it up, but go ahead with you.
But to
the point on this,
to the larger point, that, you know, secondary coaching and our positional coaching on defense in general has been in transition. So you do wonder about development issues for that rookie class. For me. Especially in the secondaries, considering how poorly even the veterans played. You know, Marcus Williams just fell off a cliff, which does give me concern about kind of Bo Braid and Kane's first year development. Maybe I'm reading too much into that, but that is something I'm keeping an eye on. But yeah.
All right. Well, let's get right into it in terms of maybe what we'd like to see from 2025 for Kane. I've got a few things, but do you have something specific you want to see in terms of a developmental goal, something he needs to get better at, something, some component of play he needs to pick up?
I think, you know, from his perspective as trying to make a career in the NFL, if he's average at the back end in his second year, I think he can start being, maybe get sort of a Chuck Clark type of position. Mm-hmm. I think who Sanusi Kane should try to, his goal to be. You know, I think he brings a similar skill set out of college. I don't think they're particularly far off in terms of body type and athleticism. I think a lot of the same career trajectory of being a teamer into being a competent player. And then also the thing that Chuck Clark became really good at is Chuck Clark could wear the green dot if he had to. I mean, he was a big leader on the back end. So for Kane, you got to know that playbook like it's your favorite book from childhood. You know, you got to have it down to religion. But just honestly, if he can be an average back end coverage safety, that's a phenomenal gain for him. And I think that's professionally what he should aspire to.
Yeah, I think that's good. The Chuck Clark one is a really interesting one because Chuck Clark is available right now. he could very well be a guy they bring in for the back end role. And I don't think he'd let the team down. I don't think he'd be the ball hawk that you might hope for back there, but I don't think he's going to have coverage breakdowns. So I think he's going to have make good use of his instincts to make up for any lack of speed that he has at this point. He's had some injuries. He's getting older, but very smart, savvy player. I think he immediately helps you. And if he's playing a half field role where he's playing maybe 60% of the snaps, maybe even a little bit more, no reason why Chuck Clark can't go back to being a great special teams player, which he was in his early years with the Ravens. So right. I think you get two for the price of one if you bring Chuck Clark in. I would think he signs for the vet minimum. I mean, we'll see. But, I mean, there's a big glut of safeties his age looking to get another shot.
Yeah, it's a buyer's market for sure.
All right. One of the other thing I'll say about Kane is he really needs to be healthy during camp. And I say this about a lot of players, but it's really important for the rookies. These are the guys who get the most of their playing time comes in the preseason. I realize Sanusi Kane's a second year player, but he hasn't gotten very much playing time at all on the defensive side of the ball. And this camp, the Ravens now need him and will force the issue. They don't have an Eddie Jackson they have to feed snaps to. They don't have to figure out whether Ardarius Washington is going to play safety or nickel. And they were doing that a lot of last camp as well. They can have Sanusi Kane and Bo Braid get real auditions back there and play even more snaps in the preseason, but he's got to be healthy in order to do that. Soft tissue injuries have to be avoided. And the guy I really like talking about soft tissue injuries with is Kadri Ishmael, because he basically has his own business now trying to avoid some of these injuries, like teaching movement skills to people. But they've got to find a way to reduce those injuries.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about what a good season and a great season is. I allow the people who come on this show have widely divergent ways in which they want to define this. I define it at the 60th and at the 80th percentile of what I think are a reasonable set of outcomes, but it's a subjective judgment, certainly in my case. You define it however you like.
Yeah, I think realistic expectations is core special teams contributions. If he didn't contribute to special teams in a meaningful way, I would be very surprised. Mm-hmm. He seems to have a real knack for that. That's part of football. I think a good expectation is competent safety play. You're not looking for, I think Washington's unrealistic in terms of coverage. I just don't think that's going to happen. And I don't think we should expect it to happen, but if he can be around, let's say the 55th to 60th percentile of deep safety play, that at least lets him win more snaps than he doesn't. And sometimes when you're trying to win football games in the NFL, you just need to win snaps little by little.
That would be, to me, that would be really outstanding if he could get to that level. A good season for me, I'd define it a little lower. I'd say stays healthy for a trial at the free safety / split field role. Special teams play is maintained both in terms of volume and quality, particularly with a new kickoff return emphasis. We didn't talk about that, but with the 35-yard line being the spot where touchbacks are placed, there's going to be a lot more returns. So you got to be better on tackling on those plays. They'll take an increased emphasis this year, and Sanusi Kane will be a big part of that. And so that means there's more contact involved, obviously, in those plays. But the combination of those two things, I think, will secure a spot on the 53 and position himself for a shot on the defense when and if injuries strike. And I don't expect his spot to come up until a problem comes up. So they'll try and get Sanusi Kane. They'll give him a trial, but the trial is to see if they can afford to let him be the guy when the time comes. So if they start the season with a third safety, whoever that might be, let's say it's Chuck Clark.
Right.
Then Clark will be in on third down, Hamilton and excuse me one sec. Try and make use of the cough button and work it through a cold here. But Hamilton and Starks will be on the back end in the base package. And then when they go to other packages like the nickel or the dime, then they'll have to move safeties around. And then they'll know whether or not Kane is ready to go and make use of him, or if they have an injury.
Right. Yeah. He's a hope, not a not a person you rely on right now.
All right, I'm with you. How about a great season? What does that look for?
I think my good season is your great season, it sounds like. I mean, a great season would be if he really becomes a true difference maker. If he's well above average safety, such that, especially deep field coverage, he's a plus-plus player, you know, or a plus player. Oh, wow. somewhere where he's not. So let me take that back, because that is kind of wild. I would say a great season from Sanusi Kane is when he is a meaningful contributor on the back end, as opposed to just a competent contributor. Because I think good is just above bad. Like, you can do it at an NFL level. If he can play deep coverage at an NFL level, I think that's good for him. If he can change the game, or at least impact the game in a positive way, kind of maybe 85% of Geno Stone back there.
Okay.
I think that would be a huge boon, and that would be great to me. I mean, that's his great to me would be like, that's my 99th percentile of my goal. Like, just pretty unrealistic, but.
All right. Well, that's fine. You define it however you want. I 80th percentile for me, great season is makes the 53 where the quality of his special teams play makes him indispensable. And he's a regular activation on game day. So no unexplained deactivations on game day. His camp and preseason trial is biased to help him succeed because of his relative importance to special teams. So that, I think, is probably going to happen, is that he's going to get a bigger trial than Braid will, because Braid is not the special teams player that Kane is. And it could be that both of them will get a bigger trial than some other player they would bring in, because they're both already special, you know, known commodities on special teams that they seem to like. The team gets some indication he's ready for safety play at either the back end or dime, where we may well see him, by the way. We hope we won't see him at free safety or at split field safety, but we may well see him at dime. And then he meets the Ravens standard of a primary special teams player who could step in on defense. And that meets all the names from the Ravens litany of survivors, with McClellan, Levine, Mitchell, Nakamura. Corey Harris really developed into a safety who was on the field a lot more after being more of a special teams player initially. But I think Kane sets himself up for a 8 or 9 year NFL career if he can succeed in this role. So if he can be a guy that they can depend on to be their fourth safety, step in on the back end as needed, and can also play special teams the way he does, I think he'll have a long and productive NFL career.
Yeah, he's, you know, sometimes you're really just looking, when you're looking at those seventh round picks, it's just, can they get to a second contract? You know, can another team look at this person and realistically expect them to contribute and help them win? You know, you think about the Brandon Stevens contract that the Jets signed. You know, that's a huge boon. I mean, for him in his career as a fourth round pick.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's a big win. I think of it more like Kane's target should be get to the Tylan Wallace contract. So he gets to year five and they give him $2.1 million. And they could have given him some of that veteran benefit money that they're only allowed to give to two players, and they have to be 4 year veterans with your team. If I were Sanusi Kane, I'd have a laser focus on those dollars right now. So Patrick Ricard got all the Ravens money this year, but they have about $1.5 million to spend above the cap level. Sorry, that does not count as cap, that they can give the player. And what it does is create this natural friction that player then stays with the team. And Kane could be a Raven for life if it works out that well.
Right.
All right, let's move over and talk a little bit about Roger Rosengarten, because I think that's what people are excited. We've spent almost 30 minutes talking about Sanusi Kane. You know, one of the great things about Roger Rosengarten is he won't be 23 until June, which is fantastic. You know, given that he's already got a full season under his belt, you look at what happened last year, a very crowded draft of left tackles, and he wasn't drafted till number 62, which I don't remember if he was the seventh, eighth, ninth left tackle drafted, but he outplayed everyone ahead of him with the exception of Joe Alt, the number 5 overall pick. So Armarius Mims and Guyton, and who are some of the other tough guys? Latham from Alabama and There were a number of others that got drafted in that first round.
Fashano.
That's another good one. And yeah. Fashano and Fautano, right? Both of them, there are two of them that have very similar names that I always get them wrong. But one went to the Steelers and didn't play at all. And the other one went to, might have been the Jets. And he didn't do a whole lot, but he did not play as well as Rosengarten anyway. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say the reason we spent so much time talking about Sanusi Kane is we now have huge questions mark at safeties, and Roger Rosengarten looks like a blue chip guy after his rookie year. I mean, where do we put him in the ranks of NFL tackles? We can debate, but he's going to be playing on the Ravens offensive line, hopefully for the rest of his career in a meaningful way. I think he looks like that to me.
Yeah. I'm positive on him in a lot of ways. I think there are some things about him that are untested right now. And this is
breaking news. And this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah. It's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
From the glasses half full perspective, he took over the job as a rookie third week. They probably didn't even need him to wait the first 3 weeks, though he did have some. He didn't look great in those first three games, I'll say this, including he caused a fumble, I think, on his first NFL snap where he actually hit the ball out of the quarterback's hands. So things are not ideal.
It was a bad snap. I don't remember. I know the exact snap you're talking about. I can't remember what happened, but I remember it hurt.
And then a bad rep, you're saying. Not a bad snap. It was like...
A bad rep, for sure. Yeah. It was against Chris Jones, and ooh boy.
Yeah. Well, from the glasses half empty perspective, it's a little different. You got a guy who was not really tested in his rookie year as much as you would hope to get a great reading on him. The Ravens, you know, we mark down set and chip blockers for every single play of the season. And you know, there's a whole lot of R80 and R88 and those sorts of things that are showing up on what we do. And some of them are sets, some of them are chips, but either way, he's getting help on a lot of those plays. And it really reduced our ability, I think, to get a great read on who he is as a pass blocker. I'm not ready to anoint him into a future left tackle role by any stretch. I'm hopeful that he can be effective on the right side in 2025, and that's going to tell us more about who he is. But, it's still a good rookie season by any reasonable set of expectations you might have for the 62nd overall pick. I just don't think they have a clear path to him being a left tackle.
Yeah, I agree with that. I definitely think very highly of Roger for a right tackle expectation. I'm very excited about him. You know, he seems like he's going to be a guy who's, you know, we've had really good right tackles in the past. You know, when I started watching, it was Zeus was the first right tackle I ever saw, which is a high bar. You just think, you know, when you're a kid and your right and left tackles are Jonathan Ogden and Orlando Brown, you just don't really understand what an edge rusher is when you're like 10 years old. You know what I mean? And then you see other people get blown by and you're like, why would you ever, you know, get blown by? But yeah, for Roger, I think the realistic expectation is that he shouldn't need this much help anymore. He does. I know you probably know Cole Jackson and his breakdown of, you know, all the offensive line tape. That's where I've learned a lot from watching offensive line. But the way I see Roger is he's not like Lane Johnson or Penny Sewell, where he has this huge size, right, where he can kind of let the bull rush in. He's got to go out there and get it. You know, he's kind of got to bring the fight to the rusher, and that's a little bit riskier. So if he can do that in isolation without so much kind of chip coming through, running back coming through, it's going to open up the offense a lot. So I think for him, we're mainly seeing how much he can handle on his own now that he's a second-year player.
Yeah, I would agree with you. He's a guy who was remarkably consistent for a rookie. Didn't have any grade from me below a C after week 10. And by the way, that was a big watershed moment for the Ravens. They fixed their defense and they fixed their offensive line basically at the same time by cutting down on penalties. And that was really nice. No failing grades the entire year. He did have three Ds, Washington, Denver, and Cincinnati in weeks 6 to 10. And his aggregate grade is actually higher than Ronnie Stanley. But this is part of the problem that I don't really think that grade reflects it accurately for him. Accurately is the wrong word. It doesn't have the same level of focus as it would for another player who had a similar set of being left on an island to Ronnie.
The data represents he did better with fewer responsibilities.
Yeah.
As opposed to Ronnie, who was playing a much harder game out there.
Yep.
Didn't play it maybe as well, but yeah, I mean, you block Trey Hutchinson one-on-one, see how you feel, man. Like some of those guys. Yeah, it's a mean league.
All right, so what would I say? A solid B at tackle for the year, by the way, where, you know, as I grade him, and yet I have trouble buying into that grade. He's one of the only players I've ever had that happen with, by the way. Most of the time, it's a guard. You know, there's nobody helping you chip block when you're a guard. You know, you have to do your own thing. Same thing as center. Left tackle, it's unusual. It does happen occasionally, but the Ravens haven't done too much of this over the years where they've helped out a player to the degree they helped out Rosengarten this last year. We will, I'm sure, see a more stress applied to him this next year, and I hope he comes out of it as well as he did last year. In fact, in a lot of ways, I think if he duplicated his season in terms of a quality of per snap quality of blocking as I score it, then I think he would be taking a step forward if they did it with less help.
As a general statement for Roger, I feel really good about him. I feel like I expect him to be better. I expect him to improve. I feel like the coaching staff feels the same way. You know, I think he did really well as a rookie. I mean, it's tough to play. You very rarely see really superb contributions from rookie offensive linemen. They tend to take, a year or two to really develop. I can't think of a lot of guys that started before their second year. So for Roger, the other thing that I'm really looking at is his run blocking, because that, I think, isn't as natural of a talent for him. I mean, he's not going to be Penei Sewell, and he doesn't have that size. He doesn't have that mass. So for Roger, most of his run blocking is by positioning, angle, leveraging, seal offs, you know, getting in space, things like that. So I'm wondering how much the Ravens can scheme to that. I also kind of worry about scheming to that when you're playing next to Daniel Falele, who cannot kind of replicate that kind of athletic movement philosophy in the run game.
Right. So you have elephants on parade, except one of them is a hippo or something who doesn't quite have the same sort of athleticism.
Right.
I'm not going to disagree with that. What I will say is it's two and a half times as important how good a pass blocker he is relative to how good a run blocker he is. He has a shortcoming in both situations. He may not have the athleticism you want him to have, and he certainly does not have the size you want him to have to be a great run blocker. And we've already kind of seen that in his rookie year. He showed up better in terms of his scoring as a pass blocker than as a run blocker, whether you're looking at PFF stuff or mine. The drawback is really as a pass blocker that he's getting help, not as a run blocker. So you got the drawback is there that you don't completely trust the pass blocking score as being as good as it would be if he didn't have help. And the run blocking grade, unfortunately, is not as good as the pass blocking score. And you questions naturally arise, but I think it's, you know, you kind of have to pick what you're going to be good at, and no one can be good at everything. He's really got more of a left tackle's frame. He's got left tackle, you know, tried to have left tackle feet. He may be somewhat short of that. He doesn't quite have left tackle length, but he's got more of a left tackle frame in terms of being a taller, leaner guy than a guy who carries a ton of mass in his rear end. He doesn't have enormous glutes, enormous butt, the pear shape that we think of from a guard or a right tackle. He's got more of a very lean, vertically built athlete that you normally see on the left side. He's a slight mismatch for the position, and yet I don't know if we can trust him at left tackle. And he was good in you know what we were able to discern at right tackle. I think we need another year for him, and I think that was part of the decision to re-sign Ronnie Stanley, is they just didn't feel like they knew enough about Roger Rosengarten to move him.
Oh yeah, for sure. I would have been pretty terrified if I knew Roger Rosengarten was my starting left tackle. I mean, left tackles, it's a different beast. And also just for the composition of the line in general, I think the reason we can, you know, have the right side of the line where it's just sort of like stonewalling pass blocking is because Ronnie can just blow everyone up on the other side. I mean, he is like the heart of any kind of man or down blocking scheme from right. The run game in my eyes. And then a lot of Tyler pulling and getting out in space. I do think, I mean, maybe a little bit higher in Voorhees than some people, but I am interested to see how that composition works on the other side for the run game. But in terms of the running game in general, I am a little concerned that we just can't run right. You know, if we're running right, it's going to be with pulling and other kind of scheme things as opposed to true misdirection. For his feet, you know, I'm a little surprised to hear that he didn't have left tackle feet. I think pretty much everyone who's dedicated enough to the Ravens.
I don't think I said that so far. I think, you know, I think he aspires to have those feet, and we don't really know yet.
Right.
I don't think he has left tackle length. I think that is a little bit of an issue.
He is a compact guy for his height. I would consider his feet probably maybe his greatest strength in terms of just overall movement. Yeah, I would think so.
I would agree too, and you know the one thing we haven't been able to observe completely is that he has a good anchor. He's been okay as far as he's been tested so far, but that's going to be the real test for him on an island. Is can he really absorb the bull rush the way you need him to? And it's the combination, because you're not going to get the bull rush every time. You have to overset a lot of the times to deal with speed, and then somebody comes right back into your body, and you got to deal with that. Or they switch sides on you, and you know it's a matter of how quick are you in terms of correcting from your overset initially. It's a constant battle of adjustments to play offensive tackle in the NFL.
Yeah, it's a chess game. I am curious if you have it available, Ken. Who are the pass rushers he struggled with the most? Because just from sort of memory, it felt like Hendrickson was kind of the problem. It felt like he did better against kind of the TJ Watt types, where it's a lot more, you know, I see TJ more of a moves guy, more of a speed guy, more of a kind of, you know, he plays the football game a little better, a little bit more of a heady pass rush. Whereas, you know, Hendrickson, Miles Garrett's just the freakiest guy, you know, but Hendrickson's really, to me, kind of a bull rusher primarily who works into other things. And I wonder if like that's the type of player that's going to be Rodgers' sort of kryptonite.
Okay. So the three teams that he had trouble with, his worst seasons, and most of his sack accumulation came early in the season. So by week 9, he'd given up 4.5 of the 4 and 5/6 sacks he would give up for the whole year. Mm-hmm. So I allow any portion of a sack to be divided out fractionally to those responsible. So mm-hmm. It's one of the things I'm really proud of, is I'm working with a finer set of tools than PFF is in terms of how they represent where a sack credit goes to you. Now PFF does a fine job underneath the covers in terms of giving the player a negative score on those plays, but they don't tell us what it is. And then people quote these stupid integer numbers, which don't mean anything. So that's what I have a problem with. But by game, he allowed a sack that we talked about already against Kansas City in week 1, then went 3 games without doing it, but he missed one of those games. He only played 17 against Las Vegas. Then he played 54 against Buffalo, was clean, and that was his first really good game of the year. In fact, it was his first graded game of the year because he hadn't played 20 snaps to that point. And then in week five against Cincinnati, give 2/3 of a sack. And I can't tell you whether that was 2 times 1/3 or 1 times 2/3, but it could have been either. 2/3 against Washington, 1 against Tampa Bay, 1/2 against Cleveland, and 2/3 against Denver. So that was his really weak 5-year period there. And then the D scores that he got were Washington in week 6. What else happened in that game? 4 pressures allowed and 2, and it looks like a false start penalty because it was 2 points. It was a pre-snap non-declinable foul is the only one that falls into that category. And it didn't look great against Cleveland in week 8 where he had 1/2 a sack and 2 and 5/6 pressures. And then he had 2/3 of a sack and 3 pressures against Denver. So, Denver, Cincinnati, and Washington were the 3 games.
Huh. Yeah. That's funny to hear. Cause when I think of the only pass rusher I know in Denver, and maybe I just don't know the league well enough. The only pass rusher I know is Benito.
Yeah.
He's exceptional, but he's a speed guy. So that you've disproven my hypothesis. I can't think of a single, major bull rusher on those. I wonder if in those games, because those are kind of weaker pass rushing teams, Jonathan Grenard, excuse me. Jonathan Grenard is a strong player, a solid player, more of a run defender. Benito's really the only pass rusher I can remember from that group besides.
Well, Cincinnati has Hendrickson, and he's most of the time he's on that left side. Hendrickson is one who really wants to face the naked tackle, and that's almost always Ronnie Stanley. But if we're talking Cleveland, who they played, they played in the group. He had a C game versus Cleveland. I mean, they're facing it with Za'Darius Smith and Garrett, on each side, and even Garrett playing some probably on that right side.
Yeah, I'm wondering if those were games where he had less help, because maybe with Washington specifically, they thought there wasn't enough threat for him to be in isolation, and he got a little exposed there.
Right, it could be. Yeah. I don't remember if was T.J. Watt, did he miss one of the games? Because he had a very good game in week 16, and I'm not sure if T.J. Watt played or not, and that would have been in the game in Baltimore against the Steelers.
He was gimpy because I remember they played Kansas City, I think, the week before us, and they made a lot about TJ's ankle in that game. I know he wasn't 100% towards the end of the season.
All right, we're going on pretty far here. Let's talk about what a good season and a great season is for Roger Rosengarten. What's good to you?
I think a good season, he should certainly expect to be the starter. I think he should expect less help. I think he should prove himself more when he is in isolation, especially in pass blocking situations. I think Rodgers, with the first year, there's such a large sample size of how he played. I know in the circumstance of what we don't want now, where it's like we're constantly leaving tight ends and backs in to help him, but we have enough of a sample size to know that if he's not a starter, that's a disaster, right? Very realistic starter. But I think a good season is, let's say we reduce help by, second year jump, let's say 40-50% drop.
Okay.
In terms of how much help he needs.
Okay. I think that's a good way to put it. I should have maybe thought about doing it exactly that way. I'll just read mine. Moves along the developmental curve with the quality of play given help. So I'm expecting if he were to play the same and is given less help, 25% less help, 30% less help, whatever. That's a step forward. That would be moving along the developmental curve, so that would be fine. Shows his feet are at least good enough to play right tackle, and his anchor continues to hold up as it did in the second half of 2024. Hope is maintained, and hopefully it doesn't come to a trial in 2025, because that would be very bad, that he could somehow move to left tackle later. Now, the Ravens are playing a multi-year game with Carson Vincent, in my opinion. He won't be activated at all, I don't believe, in 2025. I don't think he's physically ready for that. And he may not be ready in 26. And there's so much, the combination of what needs to happen in terms of how he improves physically and technically is going to push that date out. What might be pulling it sooner is the fact that Warhop is completely invested in the guy. So it could be Carson Vincent is the next left tackle for the Ravens. And if that were to happen, then you know, it obviates, it takes away the need for Rosengarten to be the guy.
Yeah, agreed. There's always those late round picks that you have huge hopes for. You know,
yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, but Carson Benson, I mean, you look at him, I'm really surprised he didn't get recruited, because that guy just looks like he came out of the womb in like a 3-point stance. You know what I mean? He's a big boy. So he certainly has the frame and size. Whereas with Roger, he's a much more compact player. So you worry about isolating him that much on the left side, kind of, I think, long-term. But Roger Rosengarten's been a really good football player everywhere he's gone. You know, mm-hmm. I think the game comes really naturally to him, even though he doesn't have the greatest physical tools. Looking there, and also, I guess you say it all the time, Penix was a left-handed quarterback, so he was the blindside protector. You know, we keep saying it, but
Vinson also has a body type that I believe is left tackle or bust. So if he doesn't end up, he's obviously, Rosengarten has that body type too for the most part. But he's a very tall, very lean guy, relies heavily on length. I mean, he was built to play left tackle. He's not a big sand in the pants guy. He's a more extreme version of what Roger Rosengarten. Roger Rosengarten is probably saying, if I had his tools, I'd be great right now, kind of thing. I really hope Vinson is as coachable as he seemed to be in rookie minicamp, because it's so easy to get excited about a player. And more than that, I'm excited about Warhop's relationship with him, because I saw this with Dalsandris and Fa'alele, and the fact that those two, you know, that he was so invested in Fa'alele was, I think, part of what brought him success last year. They stuck with him through what looked like some very oafish times, and he ended up rewarding him with a pretty darn good final five games of the year that I think give us really positive portent for 25. So I'm looking forward to that that paying out for Vinson too. I don't know if you saw the 30-second or so clip of Vinson being the third guy to talk to him when he got drafted.
Yeah, the phone call.
Yeah. He is bought in.
there is something about offensive line coaches and their late round guys. It's the same. I forgot the coach's name in Philly, but with the left tackle there now, I mean, that was the huge, you know, you're going down to New Zealand to find a left tackle, and it's just like, I'll show you what I can. It's just like the coach is like Sistine Chapel. It's just some guy you never knew who's like in the second team All Pro. And, you know, there's just a 70-year-old man. It's like, I showed him the way.
Yeah. There's Karate Kid moments working all through this that are cool. Let's talk about a great season for Rosengarten.
Yeah. I don't think it's unrealistic for there's a difference between, I think, the player's perception of a great season and our perception of the great season. I think a fan's perception of the great season should be like an 80th percentile right tackle. Someone mm-hmm. who's like a true isolation pass blocker and a plus run blocker, I think would be great from Roger. If you can keep the run game, chess game sort of truly right or left, you know, where you can kind of threaten more schematic, rushing options, I think that's great from Roger. I think for him, for his perception, like, I think Roger should really shoot for a Pro Bowl. I think he should try to really, really stand out. He's a really athletic guy. He's got gumption and moxie, and he can really bring the fight out there. But, you know, shoot for him, I think he should shoot for the moon, you know.
So, I mean, that's perfectly reasonable to hope for that. I'm going to say at the 80th percentile, I don't even really care that much about how much his run blocking improves, mm-hmm. just that it doesn't take a step backwards. It's really all about what he does as a pass blocker. And there, he really needs to develop into a top quartile guy. I'm probably okay if he develops into a top quartile guy, whether he gets, you know, 80% as much help as he did before or not. But there's at least got to be an indication that he's going to be able to do it in the future without as mm-hmm. much help. And then he'll be good. But I think top quartile is where I would hope in his second year he could be. If he is, that's a marvelous developmental move. I mean, so it's much bigger than what I laid out in the good season. I think we need to see a solid anchor from him. for an NFL right tackle. I want him to be not a fish out of water when he's dealing with some of the division rivals and what they bring in terms of the edge rush. And I think the other thing that is a difficult ask of either him or Linderbaum, and you already know what it's probably going to be, is that they develop some sort of synergy with Daniel Faalele. Daniel Faalele is a very talented offensive lineman in some regards and is a big black hole in some others. And so the onus falls on the center of the right tackle to be able to develop that synergy with him differently, picking up more responsibilities than they might otherwise have to. Got to stay with the handoffs a little bit longer. Got to be sure you're the guy who picks up. I got to do more of inside out protections. If you're the center, you know, you're going to have to maybe stay with a combination block a little longer to make sure that it gets finished. But anyway, the things that Daniel Faalele can do for you are pretty significant if you have the right players around him.
I'm wondering if you think, just kind of a thought after you saying that, I wonder if, do you think some of the help Roger was getting was kind of a cascading effect of how he has to play based on having to stay? Because the way Cleveland attacked us in the last game was essentially to rush really wide, you know, create these really wide rushing lanes, mm-hmm. and then give Daniel Faalele like this huge space where a blitzer would have a two-way go, or you had like a stun that kind of came in. Do you think some of the tactics the Ravens deployed, kind of overhelping on the right side, was sort of this cascade of kind of the rhythm of the snap of protecting Daniel as well?
Yeah, I think that's a very good hypothesis. I haven't checked it. I haven't really tried to see, you know, how are things breaking down from that perspective. But I think that's a very reasonable hypothesis, is that if you don't put that help on, for Rosengarten, then Faalele is the one who'll end up looking even worse out of the thing, because Rosengarten will have to stick with his man more, will have to deal with the outside more. And, you at least give the offensive lineman a chance to figure out their blocking from zero over on that side and at the worst case scenario, your tight end has a pickup from somebody who may be rushing from level two or even off the slot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that a lot. That's a good thought, Justin. I'll have to really maybe go back and watch some film, or just be on the lookout for it more likely this season in terms of whether or not I think that's significant. Faalele has to take a step forward too in some significant ways. But he's taken the first big step in those last five games of the year. And I'm, you know, I'd almost be, if he could play at that level for a whole year, I mean, he'd be a really fine lineman. If he could do that. So if it's not like he has to completely change everything he's done, he has to maintain the last five games. That's we have a thing in actuarial work called recent historical experience that is a driving tenet with regard to how you look at things in regard to assumptions. So because it's very easy to build actuarial models and basically make the assumptions fit the outcome you want. There's way too much of that in the actuarial world. So there's all these guidelines that are done that talk about recent historical experience. And it's always the most recent is the most pertinent is one of the things that continually comes up. And that's, I think, the case with Daniel Faalele. So I'm hoping we got a five-game preview into something that's really good for Daniel.
Yeah, and I know it's a basic saying, but the offensive line really is a team. It's a synergy unit for sure. So when I think of Rosengarten and Faalele, I really think of the right side. You know, yeah. I really think of offensive lines, left side, right side, and I kind of include the center in both of those. And you know, that right side, if it can just 15-20% better, I don't need another world. I just need a step and a half.
Yeah. Well, they're both young players. They're both starting out at the position. And there's a reason that both players could get better this year. And it's one of the very exciting things about the offensive line. Left guard is actually much more of a question to me than either position on the right side, because I don't think we know right now who's going to be playing with it. And I don't think we know what the set of goals are, because part of what the Ravens need to be worried about is that they can't come to terms with Linderbaum and need to find their next center, who very well might be starting at left guard this year.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. Justin, great talking football with you. Get some great thoughts on this. I really appreciate you coming on. I appreciate all the work you did on the draft. By the way, if you watch the draft, we had a few graphics on cornerbacks and whatnot, and wide receivers, and some other things in terms of how they had performed in 2024 in terms of percentile rank. And Justin was the one who put a lot of that together. We were just talking about the show. We're talking about expanding that next year and hopefully making use of it. Justin, thanks so much for coming on. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
You can follow me on Twitter, Justin Isett. Just my simple Twitter handle, Isett, 1S, 2 T's. Also a filmmaker and artist. You can follow me on Instagram. It is Voodoo, IZ Voodoo. I'm down in Atlanta. I'm a filmmaker down here. So if you want to, if any Venn diagram of that interest, also more than happy to share that part of my life. Ken, thanks so much for having me. Thanks for everything you do for the fans. Had a blast.
I appreciate you, Justin. Other folks out there, if you'd like to get on Film Study Short, I'm getting all kinds of good ideas coming in, and this is the season for it. We've got about 2 months here that are fairly lean on total football content, but this is the time to get the passion project for the offseason done for you. If you want to look at some particular statistical thing, if you want to make some argument for a different way that the Ravens ought to run a package or run an offensive or defensive scheme, love to hear it. Love to talk about it with you. Just DM me. They're always open on Twitter. Justin, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks so much, man.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it, it's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone, all with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.